Chapter 5. By the time we got back to my place, my head was starting to run at its normal speed, the better to inform me how much it hurt. I had a nice, deep-down body ache to go along with the bruised skull. The light of the afternoon sun stabbed at my eyes in a cheerfully vicious fashion, and I was glad when I shambled down the steps to my basement apartment, disarmed my magical wards, unlocked the door, and shoved hard at it. It didn't open. The previous autumn, zombies had torn apart my steel security door and wrecked my apartment. Though I was getting a modest paycheck from the wardens now, I still didn't have enough money to pay for all the repairs, and I had set out to fix the door on my own. I hadn't framed it very well, but I tried to think positive. The new door was arguably even more secure than the old one. Now you could barely get the damn thing open, even when it wasn't locked. While I was in home renovation mode, I put down linoleum in the kitchen, carpet on the living room and bedroom floors, and tile in the bathroom, and let me tell you something. It isn't as easy as those Time Life homeowner books make it look. I had to slam my shoulder against it 3 or 4 times, but the door finally groaned and squealed and came open.
"I thought you were going to have a contractor fix that," Murphy said.
"When I get the money."
"I thought you were getting another paycheck now."
I sighed. "Yeah, but the rate of pay was set in 1959, and the council hasn't given it a cost of living increase since. I think it comes up for review in a few more years."
"Wow, that's even slower than City Hall."
"Always thinking positive." I went inside, stepping onto the large wrinkle that had somehow formed in the carpet before the door. My apartment isn't huge. There's a fairly roomy living room with a miniature kitchen set in an alcove opposite the door. The door to my tiny bedroom and bathroom is on the right as you come in, with a red brick fireplace set in the wall beside it. Bookshelves, tapestries, and movie posters line the cold stone walls. My original Star Wars poster had survived the attack, though my library of paperbacks had taken a real beating. Those darn zombies. They always dog-ear the pages and crack the spines the minute they're done oozing foul goop and smashing up furniture. I have a couple of secondhand sofas, which aren't hard to get cheap, so replacing them wasn't too bad. A pair of comfortable old easy chairs by the fire, a coffee table, and a large mound of gray and black fur rounded out the furnishings. There's no electricity, and it's a dim little hole, but it's a dim, cool little hole. And it was a relief to get out of the broiling sun. The small mountain of fur shook itself, and something thudded against the wall beside it as it rose up into the shape of a large, stocky dog covered in a thick shag of gray fur, complete with an almost leonine mane of darker fur around his neck, throat, chest, and upper shoulders. He went to Murphy straight away, sitting and offering up his right front paw. Murphy laughed and grabbed his paw briefly. Her fingers couldn't have stretched around the offered limb. "Hiya, Mouse." She scratched him behind the ears.
"When did you teach him that, Harry?"
"I didn't," I said, stooping to ruffle Mouse's ears as I went past him to the fridge. "Where's Thomas?" I asked the dog. Mouse made a chuffing sound and looked at the closed door to my bedroom. I stopped to listen for a moment and heard the faint gurgle of water in the pipes. Thomas was in the shower. I got a Coke out of the fridge and glanced at Murphy. She nodded. I got her one too and dotted over to the couch to sit down slowly and carefully, my aches and pains complaining at me the whole while. I opened the Coke, drank, and settled back with my eyes closed. Mouse lumbered over to sit down by the couch and lay his massive head on one knee. He pawed at my leg. "I'm fine," I told him. He exhaled through his nose, doggy expression, somehow skeptical, and I scratched his ears to prove it. "Thanks for the ride, Murph."
"Sure," she said.
She brought out a plastic sack she'd carried in and tossed it on the floor. It held my robe, stole, and cloak, all of them spattered with blood. She walked over to the kitchen sink and started filling it with cold water.
"So, let's talk."
I nodded and told her about the Korean kid. While I did that, she put my stole in the sink and started washing it briskly in the cold water. "That kid is what wizards mean when they talk about warlocks," I said. "Someone who has betrayed the purpose of magic, gone bad, right from the start." She waited a moment and then said, in a quiet, dangerous voice,
They killed him here, in Chicago?
Yes, I said. I felt even more tired. This is one of our safer meeting places, apparently.
You saw it?
Yes.
You didn't stop it?
I couldn't have, I said. There were heavyweights there, Murphy, and I took a deep breath. I'm not sure they were completely in the wrong.
Like hell they weren't, she snarled. I don't give a good goddamn what the White Council does over in England, or South America, or wherever they want to hang around flapping their beards, but they came here.
Had nothing to do with you, I said. Nothing to do with the law, that is. It was internal stuff. They would have done the same to that kid no matter where they were.
Her movements became jerky for a moment, and water splashed over the rim of the sink. Then she visibly forced herself to relax, put the stole aside, and went to work on the robe.
Why do you think that? She asked. The kid had gone in for black magic in a big way, I said. Mind control stuff, robbing people of their free will.
She regarded me with cool eyes. I'm not sure I understand.